In August 1940, Winston Churchill wrote an important memo to his war cabinet. He demanded that every member of his cabinet read and remember this memo. It was titled Brevity. Here's what it said.
To do our work, we all have read a mass of papers. Nearly all of them are far too long. This wastes time while energy has to be spent looking for the essential points. I ask my colleagues and their staffs to see to it that their reports are shorter. He then proceeds to how we should do that and some examples. And then he argues that it will not only save time, it will not only be more effective, but it will also discipline thinking.
In the midst of the biggest crisis to face Britain in living memory, Churchill took the time to share a memo asking people to write with brevity. He asked them to reduce the amount of information they shared, to make shorter points, and to be concise. Why? Because Churchill had a hunch that being concise was more important than we'd expect. Today on Nudge, a world-leading Harvard professor will explain to me why Churchill's hunch is backed by science. All of that coming up. Marketing Made Simple, hosted by Dr. JJ Peterson, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals, and it is the podcast I'd love to recommend today. Marketing Made Simple brings you practical tips to make your marketing easy and, more importantly, make it work. In a recent episode, JJ spoke about the power of one-liners. He shared how these short business descriptions are the foundation for your marketing efforts, and I think that episode is well worth a listen. So tune into Marketing Made Simple wherever you get your podcasts. My guest today is someone who follows Churchill's advice, not just because he believes in it, but because he's conducted studies that prove its validity. Here he is, introducing himself.
Hi, I'm Todd Rogers. I'm a professor of public policy at Harvard, and I'm the co-author of the book, Writing for Busy Readers.
Todd and Churchill agree that brevity is key, but strangely, they're in the minority. Most of us irrationally believe that sharing more can be more effective. Here's why.
I think we have a lot of information in our heads, and we think that other people would be more convinced if they had all of the compelling content that convinces us that we are right in whatever it is we're saying. But I think that the error that people make is not taking the perspective of the other person and realizing that the other person is really busy. And most people, when they read anything we send them, their goal is to move on as quickly as possible, often without even understanding what we've talked about. And so when you take that perspective, then it really is this trade-off between, if I was able to deliver from my head into your head all the reasons that what I am saying is right, all the important content that you need to understand, all the reasons I want you to take this action, maybe that would work. But in reality, most people are going to give up or skip entirely whatever we wrote if it's too much. And so it's this trade-off between, maybe they're right that more would be better if people read it. The problem is just that people are not reading it.
In his book, Todd makes the point that most of us have never been taught to write concisely. We are taught to fill a word count, to write at least 4 pages. We build this association with length and effort, and we assume that writing less is just less work. Take editing, for example. When editing a written piece of work, it makes sense for writers to remove words to make the piece more concise. Yet one study by Gabrielle Adams at the University of Virginia found that the opposite happens. In the study, participants were asked to read and summarize a short article about the discovery of King Richard III's bones beneath a parking lot in Leicester. After completing their study, they were asked to edit it and improve the text. In response, 83% of the participants added words rather than removing them. Yet adding words to text doesn't improve the text. Todd believes it makes the text worse. And he's got evidence to back this up.
Sure. So we scraped 7,000 email addresses of elected school board members in the United States. And we were going to email them, asking them to fill out a survey about important decisions they were making during the pandemic. And the actual first draft that we wrote was, I'm a professor. I'd like to ask you some questions. I know what you do is important. I know you're very busy. I know that you're serving lots of others. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's a very hard job you have. You're balancing competing interests. And like maybe six or seven sentences of just gratitude and appreciation and recognition. And then it ends by, please click this link to fill out our survey. The other condition, which was just a suggestion someone had during our development of this message, they're like, well, what if we just said, I'm a professor, I'd like to ask you some questions, you're doing important work, will you please fill out the survey? So just reduce the words by two-thirds. Before running the experiment, we actually have people predict which of these two do they think will be more effective. And people read both, and almost everybody, like literally like 93% of people reading both are like, oh, obviously the longer one that is more deferential and expresses more gratitude will be more effective. So we run the experiment. More than twice as effective is the one that is much shorter. Deleting all the extra content made people more than twice as likely to respond and complete our survey, despite almost everybody thinking the opposite.
One of Todd's emails had 127 words. The other had just 49 words. Despite the majority of people thinking the wordier email would perform better, Todd found the concise email was far more effective. It yielded nearly twice as many survey responses as the wordy email. That's a 4.8 response rate compared to just 2.7%. But why? 127 words isn't a lot. It should only take about 50 seconds to read. Why does it perform so much worse compared to a 49-word email? I asked Todd.
I think there are a few mechanisms that contribute to this. One, people are just more likely to be deterred. When they open the message, they're like, oh, I'll read this later, or I'll read this never and hit delete. Other times, they'll start it and they'll give up midway through. So it's cognitively taxing. They're figuring out quickly that it's not something that's very important to them. But there's a third one that was interesting that we didn't expect on this that someone suggested, which is when someone is asked to complete a survey, they're clicking on something and going off into the void, being directed to some place they don't know about. And in the version that's short, we later found out in other follow-up studies, in the short message, people think the survey is going to be short. And in the long message, they think the survey is going to take a long time. In a way, we are signaling whether we value their time by how we wrote the appeal.
Not only do readers ignore long messages, they see the length of a message as a signal of the ask. They presume that the survey is longer because the message is longer. In a separate study, Todd found that 29% of respondents who saw the concise email believed the survey would take less than 5 minutes to complete, compared to just 15% of the respondents who saw the wordier email. Most readers, but especially those of us who are pressed for time, are likely to be put off by requests that just look too time-consuming. But despite the evidence, Todd struggles to convince people. In his book, he shares a story about a school district he worked with during the COVID pandemic. To persuade them to use brevity, he shared a presentation revealing this data. He shared how a concise message yielded more responses than a wordy message, but the marketers at the school ignored him. The school district decided to continue using the wordy message anyway. Clearly, Todd needed more evidence. So he conducted additional studies, this time on a much larger scale.
We worked with a network of journalists. They have 50,000 members, and each week they send them a newsletter where they direct them to summaries of scholarship that is relevant to current events. And the goal of the organization is to help journalists incorporate scholarship easily into their reporting. And they approached me and Jessica, and they're like, well, here's our newsletter. We're journalists. We're writing to journalists. We're summarizing scholarship. Here's our newsletter. How would you suggest we improve it? And whereas for some of the other experiments, we will do the editing and we'll find, oh, well, when you cut words, it's more effective. But we're choosing which words to cut. And so an alternative interpretation is maybe Jessica and I are just really good at choosing what words to cut. And so we say to them, why don't you guys edit it? And I know it's taken you 3 or 4 days to really get the newsletter right. It's 7 paragraphs. Why don't you edit it in the next 30 minutes? And then that's it. You have 30 minutes, cut it down in half, and then you'll test the original against the concise one. And so they do this test with their 50,000 members, and they find a similar thing. They roughly double the number of journalists who use the resource they put together. They thought they were done. They had written their best version. And just with the instruction, cut it in half in a very short amount of time, they managed to double its effectiveness.
It's an incredible finding. The journalists cut the original 566-word newsletter down to 275 words, but kept all of the six linked resources. The concise version of the journalist resource newsletter retained the key content they wanted to share, but to reduce the word count, the edited newsletter removed the lower priority details. Half of the newsletter subscribers received the original version, half received the concise version, and that concise version led to twice as many subscribers clicking on the links. That's a 2x improvement in engagement simply by halving the length. It's an incredible finding that all of us who write messages to encourage action need to remember. But removing words isn't your only option. Todd also found that removing links can help inspire action too. He worked with the popular website behavioralscientist.org. Now, at behavioralscientist.org, they wanted to increase the sales of their print magazine. So the marketers at behavioralscientist.org sent a set of their subscribers a promotional email containing information about their current print edition, along with a link to learn more. The email performed fine, but Todd encouraged them to test it. He said, try removing almost all the links from the email. In fact, he said, only keep one link, a link to buy the print magazine. So they did this. They tested removing a bunch of different links and just tried it with one link, the link to buy the magazine. And against what you might expect, that single link resulted in a 50% increase in clicks to buy the magazine. It increased actual sales by a similar amount as well. Reducing the options increased action. Adding just one other link had the opposite effect. Including two links sharply reduced the likelihood that any link would be clicked at all. So, when you want your reader to take an action, whether that's answering a survey, buying a magazine, or clicking a link, less is more. But you might be thinking, well, this is all great, but it's hardly a major behavior change. Getting someone to click a link is easy. Would this principle work for bigger, more consequential asks? Well, we'll find out after this quick break. It is common to hear that marketing is ever-changing, that this year is different and that customers are evolving. Honestly, in the 10 years I've worked in marketing, those predictions have been largely bogus. But last year was different. AI, the proliferation of ChatGPT, and the global use of these tools does seem to have changed marketing in significant ways. To better understand this change, I'd recommend checking out HubSpot's State of Marketing Report. The 2024 edition is the all-in-one guide for everything happening this year and how marketing has changed fairly dramatically in the past 12 months. HubSpot surveyed more than 1,400 marketing pros from across the world and curated the top trends they are thinking about. If you download the free report, you'll get all the info you need to genuinely understand how marketing is changing and to think critically about how your marketing strategies might need to evolve. Visit hubspot.com/state of marketing to get your copy. Hello and welcome back to the show with me, Phil Agnew. So far we've heard how less is more when it comes to messages, but does this principle work for larger demands? Say a financial donation to a politician? Well, let's find out.
Yeah, we have a funny one on this where we were working with a large federal political committee in the United States. They have 700,000 donors on their list and they... Again, this is our best message. What should we do? And now, instead of saying you edit it, we said, how about you arbitrarily delete every other paragraph? So you've written your fundraising message. Let's just, without any judgment at all, delete paragraph 2, 4, and 6. Go. And then let's test it. 700,000 people. They crafted it so that, it actually incorporated a bunch of news pieces and some polls. It was a pretty, it was a compelling message. We have people read both, and they say that the one with every other paragraph deleted is incoherent, and yet it increased donation by 16%.
I'm just pausing to reiterate this. Two emails were sent out to 700,000 potential donors. One contained the email in full with 6 paragraphs. The other was half as long, with three paragraphs arbitrarily cut out. Readers said the shorter email was incoherent, and yet that shorter email made readers 16% more likely to donate. Shorter messages are clearly better at driving action. And it's not only the case with emails, which can often get quite lengthy, it works with shorter mediums like text messages as well. Todd worked with a large public school district during the COVID pandemic. He tested sending two texts to 22,000 parents. One half of the parents received a 36-word text. This text read, "Thank you for participating in Virginia Summer Updates. We know distance learning can be hard. We want to help and to hear from you. Please answer this 1-minute survey to help us improve our program." Now, that's already pretty short, but Todd tried to make it even more concise. The rest of the parents in his test received just a 20-word text. This one read, "Thank you for participating in Virginia Summer Updates. Please answer this 1-minute survey." So, what do you think happened? Well, you can probably guess the answer by now. That concise message yields 6% more survey responses. Even for short-form mediums like text messages, being concise still drives action. But Todd is quick to point out that fewer words is just one of the many tips he would suggest writers employ.
But I do want to drive, there are three kinds of less is more. One is fewer words. That's easy. The other is fewer ideas. And that's hard, and it requires judgment. It requires a judgment of the more I add, the less likely someone is to read it. But if they do read it, they'll have more. So it really requires like being really clear on your goal and making these trade-offs. And the third is fewer requests. So fewer words, fewer ideas, fewer requests. And that means that we've got these experiments where when you add a second request to a message or communication, you decrease people's likelihood of doing any one of them, relative to just having one, or if you add more. So the more you ask, the less likely people are to do any one of them. And it's just sort of, it's a third kind. The spirit is the same. Everybody's busy. Everybody's trying to move as fast as they can and move on, really. And so just, we have to be disciplined. The more we ask for, the less likely we are to be successful.
Fewer words, fewer ideas, and fewer requests. Three simple ways to make your message more effective. We've shared studies on fewer words and fewer requests, but not on fewer ideas. So I asked Todd for an example.
There was a climate change study where they were asking some number of tasks, because there's a lot of behaviors people can do to reduce their carbon footprint. And they're like, here's 20 of them, do all of them. In the other condition, they restrict the number they offer, just randomly choosing the 20. Here's three, do them, as many as you can. Here's five, here's seven, here's 10. And asking people to do fewer appeared to get people to do more.
These climate change appeals, they went out to 1,500 participants. Some saw 20 different ideas on how to reduce one's environmental impact. Stuff like turning off lights, switching off appliances, a low-flow showerhead, that sort of stuff. And some saw just 5 different ideas. The result? Well, offering fewer suggestions dramatically increase the likelihood of 2 or more of the actions being taken. So, to sum up, Todd had one last request for all of you listening.
When editing what we write, anything we write, whether it's a text message coordinating our family for a weekend event or a sales pitch, add a round of edit where we ask ourselves, how do we make it easier for the reader? And often easier means fewer words, fewer ideas, fewer requests, but also it could be making it easier to skim, adding structure to it, making it easier to read. But adding a round of editing where we ask, how do I make it easier for the reader? And only you know your context. And so only you know your goals. So there isn't really a way for anyone else to do it, but to add a round to the editing process, because it'll be more effective and it'll be kinder to your reader.
Todd and I, we recorded for a full hour. We could have made this episode 3 times as long, but you're busy and your interest wanes over time. You can only remember so many suggestions. So we kept it short, and hopefully that made you enjoy it more. All right, folks, that is all for today. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Nudge. And if you did, I think you'll love Todd's book, Writing for Busy Readers. Here's Todd talking through the book in a predictably concise manner.
The book is about how to write so busy people read and respond to what we write. And what that means is everybody is skimming in some ways. How do we write in a way that accommodates the way people actually read? And the goal is to help writers, which is everyone, whether it's text message, email, or reports or sales pitches, help writers everywhere be more effective. And in the process, it's also just kinder to our readers to write in a way that makes it easy for them.
I think before anyone is allowed to write a message to encourage an action, they should be forced to read this book. It is really, really brilliant. It's easy to read and it is incredibly easy to apply. I'm using lots of the principles myself. I've left a link to pick up the book in the show notes, so head there if you'd like to get a copy. And if you like short, concise tips on how to improve your messages, then I think you'll also love my newsletter. Every week, I send a short behavioral science tip to 3,000 readers, covering all manner of different psychological advice, from pricing tips that can double sales to persuasion tips that can convince children to tidy up. Head to nudgepodcast.com and click newsletter to sign up. That is all for today. I'm your host, Phil Agnew, and I'll be back next week for another episode of Nudge. Cheers.